Case will be taken under advisement. We'll move to the third case this morning, which is Dillon versus Holder.
Good morning, Your Honors. Attorney Harold Block appearing on behalf of the petitioner in this case. This is an instance where my client arrived in the United States in 1984, became a permanent resident in 1990, was convicted of second-degree sexual assault under Wisconsin law in May of 1991, and subsequently traveled out of the U.S. several times until 2002, when his admissibility was called into question based upon the 1991 conviction. And at that time, DHS issued charges of inadmissibility. The initial notice to appear alleged that he was inadmissible because of commission of a crime of moral turpitude. Subsequently, during the course of proceedings in the immigration court, the charges were amended to include a charge of commission of an aggravated felony, as well, again, as of commission of a crime of moral turpitude. At the pleading date in the immigration court, the allegations in the notice to appear as amended were admitted, and the removal ground on the basis of crime of moral turpitude was conceded by the respondent, and the aggravated felony ground was not conceded. The judge at that time determined then that the respondent was in fact removable for commission of a crime of moral turpitude, and then subsequently over the course of proceedings a 212C waiver application was submitted on behalf of the respondent. And ultimately, the immigration court concluded that because of the case of matter of Blake, that this gentleman was not eligible for 212C eligibility under his case, because Blake had ruled that in order to be eligible, that there had to be a comparable or parallel ground under the exclusion provisions or inadmissibility provisions in order to be eligible for 212C. What I believe was overlooked by the immigration court and then subsequently also in the appeal to the Board of Immigration Appeals, as well as on a motion for reconsideration of the Board of Immigration Appeals, is that in this case specifically, that the court had indeed found that the gentleman was removable by commission of a crime of moral turpitude, and while there's only one crime that's involved in this case. And so it is our position that there's no speculation in this case as to whether, or any question as to whether, the offense was a crime of moral turpitude or not. The judge indeed ruled him removable because of it. The government, DHS, continued to assert it as a charge that they lodged against him on the ground of inadmissibility. And so I believe that these factors distinguish this case from the case of Blake and from cases in the Seventh Circuit that have arisen, the Zamora-Malari case and the Valeri case. And in those cases, the court commented that speculating that the offense might indeed be a crime of moral turpitude was not satisfactory, that the court would need to look upon actual grounds and not possible grounds. In this case, these are not possible grounds. The court ordered this defendant, this respondent, removed from the U.S. based on commission of a crime of moral turpitude. So I believe it's a different case than those that have come up previously because of that very distinctive differentiation. And in that respect, from my perspective, I don't see how it's possible to use any type of rationale to say that that the aggravated felony is not the same as a crime of moral turpitude when the court has, in fact, ruled that it is. And, again,
the problem is, counsel, though, that he's disqualified because the crime was one of sexual abuse of a minor.
Well,
and that's a separate ground for ineligibility. So any ambiguity about whether, or lack of ambiguity about whether it was a crime of moral turpitude is irrelevant because it's plainly a crime of sexual abuse of a minor, which is disqualifying under In re Blake.
Well, I understand that's the rationale of Blake, but again, you know, I would have to say that I believe that a distinguishing characteristic that indeed carries the day in this particular argument is the history of the procedure of the case in which it went, and the fact that the government, in fact, acknowledged that this matter was a crime of moral turpitude. And, you know, it's difficult for me to understand how, under any legal rationale, one could say on one hand that, yes, it's a crime of moral turpitude, you were found removable for, as a crime of moral turpitude, but we can't allow you to have the waiver because it's sexual abuse of a minor also, and therefore you know, you're not eligible because there's not this parallel ground. It's more than a parallel ground. The court determined that they were one and the same, in my view, based on the court's rulings. And I think that's quite different than what happened in the other cases. And I think that that distinction, quite frankly, is what makes this case one in which the court should have allowed this gentleman to have his 212C waiver application considered on the merits. If there aren't any other questions, I guess I would just save for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Jesse Bless. I represent the Attorney General of the United States. We are talking today about a statute that was repealed by Congress in 1996 and replaced with a more stringent type of relief available for types of aliens. Now, clearly under today's relief that's available called cancellation of removal, aggravated felons are not eligible. Okay, but that's clear. But we're talking about a prior regime that the courts and the agency that I work for, the Department of Justice, came up with a scheme which did not represent the plain language of the statute. And so what they've tried to do is say, is a person who is found deportable similarly situated to someone who would have come before the border and been turned away, someone who is excludable? And Blake is, and we've adopted, the agency's adopted regulations, and the concept that we, the fundamental difference that the petitioner and the agency have here is you don't look at the crime committed nor the conduct alleged. You look at the ground of removal, each independent ground, and you have to look to a ground of inadmissibility. And if there's one ground of deportability that does not mesh with a ground of inadmissibility, then the person is simply not eligible. And I'd like to take you to page 14 of respondent's brief, where we set out the regulation that's been adopted, and this is after INS v. St. Cyr, that had opened the door up for the petitioner in this case to claim he was eligible. And I'm looking at the middle of the first paragraph. This is the regulation that the agency determined precludes the petitioner in this case. And it says, an application for INA 212C relief shall be denied if the alien is deportable under former Section 241 of the Act or removable under Section 237 of the Act on a ground which does not have a statutory counterpart in Section 212C of the Act. Now, on a ground is the seminal word there, or the seminal phrase, because we don't have a dispute that the petitioner is removable under 237 because he committed an aggravated felony for sexual abuse of a minor. And we don't have a dispute that in this court, in Valeri and Zamora-Malari, that ground of removability does not have a statutory counterpart in INA 212. What we have is another attempt by a petitioner to say, well, hey, listen, my crime is also a crime involving moral turpitude, and therefore, you know, I'm somehow similarly situated. But that would simply absolve the framework that we have. Because if taking the petitioner's argument to the fullest extent, you would have aliens who say, why isn't DHS now charging me with a crime involving moral turpitude? I've committed an aggravated felony, but you should also charge me as a crime involving moral turpitude as well, therefore, so I can get relief. And we would drive a hole or a wedge through this ground of relief and intrude upon the Department of Homeland Security's discretion to charge aliens as it sees fit, and drive a wedge into this relief that Congress saw fit to repeal and completely absolve aggravated felons from even applying for. And every circuit that has looked at these types of situations, and I submitted one most recently in Kim in the First Circuit, they said, listen, it would simply reward criminal aliens who've committed a worse crime, because we know that not all crimes involving moral turpitude are aggravated felons. And that's the principle of Blake.
You say that the moral turpitude is just too broad, and that if there's a narrower interpretation, it should be applied?
It's just that when the board or the attorney general looked at it and its statutory analysis and counterpart analysis, the comparable grounds, which they decided in Blake, they said there's some overlap there, but not enough. And this court has agreed with that. They said that so not all sexual abuse of a minor is a crime involving moral turpitude. And because there is not, then that person who has committed sexual abuse of a minor simply is not eligible for 212C relief. And so the Attorney General asked this court to uphold the board's decision in this case. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Block? How much time? You have 3 minutes, Mr. Block, for rebuttal.
I don't believe I'll need that, but the government attorney talked about the fact that all of these people coming into immigration court would start to complain and contend that DHS hasn't charged them with a crime of moral turpitude as a basis for removability, thereby not allowing the government to exercise its prosecutorial discretion. Well, again, I have to remind the court that the government, in fact, did exercise its prosecutorial discretion. And that was the very first ground of removal that they alleged. And they didn't delete it later on when they added the aggravated felony ground. They added it to it. And as a matter of fact, in the course of the proceedings, the immigration judge made her initial ruling on removability based on the fact that there was a commission of a crime of moral turpitude. So, again, this case is, in my view, very frankly, very distinguishable from those that have appeared before the court previously and on which the court had ruled relative to this issue. And for that very distinctive difference, I believe that this case merits having the relief be made affordable and an opportunity to have the relief considered by the immigration court. It was a decision of the prosecution and a decision of the judge. It wasn't anything that the respondent complained about in terms of not having an opportunity to move forward on that. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Clark. Both counsel, the case is taken.